Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Time for tonight's panel. It's around 27 to 7 here on Classic 1027, and to talk about what's going on in the construction industry. Now, Moneyweb has been running a series of feature articles on the so-called construction mafia that are behind disturbing delays at construction sites across the country, particularly around SANRAL's road projects. Lo Carnemayor, who's an engineering executive at SANRAL, told Moneyweb that many of the agency's existing projects have been disrupted, some for months on end, and that the rollout of new projects was halted last August due to the high risk to staff and property. Now, according to Carnemayor, local communities believe that new Treasury regulations, which came into effect towards the beginning of last year, entitle them to 30% of the work in projects in their areas. So-called business forums are now demanding control over that 30% portion, which is obviously quite lucrative, but quite clearly, if you look at the preferential procurement regulations as they were published, this is an incorrect reading of those regulations. Now, it does all beg the question as to what's going on here, because there is an awful lot of speculation in the absence of feet on the ground, I should probably add. So what is going on here? We've invited some of the role players named in the series. Let's start across the table. We've got Gerald Ndlovu, who's the founder and executive director of Black Suppliers, which is a matchmaking firm that connects emerging suppliers with established businesses, particularly in the construction space. Evening, Gerald.
Good evening. Good to be here.
And next to you, we've got, we invited Lo Carnemayor of SANRAL, but his diary was busy. But we've gone even better. We've got Ismail Esser, who is SANRAL's transformation manager, who was appointed last year. So, Ismail, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to be here.
And next to you, we've got Chris Campbell, the CEO of Consulting Engineers South Africa, who are on the back end very often of all of these flare-ups, as they get a lot of the work at the back end, and if it dries up, then they don't see anything. Chris, great to have you on the panel.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And on the line,
good evening to your listeners.
On the line, we've got Tolo Nkosi, who's the CEO of Umso Construction, which is one of these emerging construction groups. Tolo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and good evening to your guests in the studio.
Ismail, kick us off tonight. What exactly has SANRAL been experiencing at its construction sites across the country?
We've had disruptions from local communities and business forums and groups that are what they call local contractors or local businesses, on the basis that they want an opportunity to be able to participate in the project. What this is a symptom of a bigger problem. We've had more than 20 years of democracy, and people believe they're not getting sufficient opportunity to participate in the SANRAL projects. And what we're seeing are the symptoms is the disruptions of the projects and the demands stopping of projects that we see. So the bigger picture is that people want an opportunity to be able to participate in the project as best as they can.
We must recognize that we have a constitution and a framework that supports the rule of law in these kinds of disputes. We have preferential procurement regulations as articulated by National Treasury. If you look at the legislative framework, it really is about ensuring that both national, provincial and local spheres of government, and in fact any other institution identified in the national legislation, contracts for goods or services in accordance with a system which is fair, equitable, transparent, competitive and cost-effective. And added to that, we've now had the amended preferential procurement regulations, which seek to drive transformation as part of government's policy in this process as well. So there is the rule of law, and then there's driving up to a construction site and demanding 30% on the barrel of a gun. What's actually happening at the construction site?
So effectively, you've got two sort of groups of people. One are the small contractors or the small business that want opportunities. So they come along and try and get work out of it. So in desperation, they do the wrong thing. And then you get the other one who arrive in their fancy cars with lots of weapons and things like that, who disrupt the project. So what we say, those are the guys that don't really want the work. They want a sort of commission to be able to let the project proceed. So you've got the criminal element, and you've also got genuine guys looking for work And the percentage, I can't tell you which is the genuine people and which are the, the, let's say, the criminal element. So that's effectively what we have.
And Gerald, from what you're seeing, I mean, you actually contacted MoneyWeb when you first read the articles to try and set the record straight, because there is obviously a criminal element and there's obviously an element of emerging suppliers who are frankly frustrated and perhaps haven't known how to go through some of the formal tendering channels. What are you seeing in terms of the people you advise on the ground?
Well, I need to state up front that we've been dealing with emerging contractors for about 10 years now. And as I do not necessarily represent any of the business forums, but I know exactly what happens at the ground level. And I should state that it's just unfortunate that things like construction mafia are starting to creep in. And I'm hoping that that's not the term that's been used by Sanral. They are right now in stating that there's a lot of genuine entrepreneurs in the construction industry who are trying to get opportunities, and they are being blocked. I think Sanral should know and find out why there's a blockage. If, as a government entity, I appoint the main contractor, who in turn is supposed to bring in emerging contractors, because they are emerging for a reason, right? They don't have a whole lot of technical skills that the main contractor has, but who's monitoring that the emerging contractors are getting the cut of the project? I think it's important for Sanral to play the monitoring role more forcefully and more strictly, so that we don't have these things happening in construction site. It is a massive problem, and we've seen that some main contractors in the industry may not necessarily care much about transformation. Some do. Those that we've done work for, and we've tried to help them to identify credible emerging local contractors, and we've done training programs for them, and we've assisted them to gain work in those projects. Some have really done significant and commendable work, but others are very hesitant. And if they have been appointed by the likes of Sanral, I think they should be worried that why they're not converting, why they don't deliver in the mandate of the government and in the mandate of the job that they've been given. So in the areas where there's been uprisings, so to speak, I think Sanral should know who's doing that, who have they appointed in those projects, and why they're not doing the right thing.
And especially if it's part of the tender document that you are going to be working with local or emerging suppliers, and then if you're not following through, Ismail will come back to that point on monitoring and evaluation post the award of that tender. But as we get through the panel, Chris, Rudolf Faree, the CEO of the country's largest road builder, Raubex, was quoted by MoneyWeb as saying that the volume of work from Sanral has dropped by 50%, and it's had a devastating effect on contractors and suppliers at the moment. I don't know if that's just unique to Raubex, but from your position at Consulting Engineers, has this started to impact the kind of work that you're feeding or seeing feed through to your members?
Actually, allow me to make a correction first. We normally get involved upstream, so we see the pace before the contractors. Because we're essentially involved in the upfront design process even before you go to execution. Right. And we know that there are a variety of reasons why the rate of projects coming out of a client like Sanral, not different from any other of the public sector clients, I would hasten to add. So I think it's we should be careful of nitpicking on Sanral. It's an industry challenge.
I just couldn't have every state-owned enterprise around the table. No, we're using Sanral as an example.
I understand that. So the challenge really is, what we're seeing up front is the slow rate of projects coming out of client bodies, Sanral being one of them. And then on the execution phase, which is where our member companies get involved, is normally playing an oversight as the resident engineer representing the interests of the client, overseeing the quality of the work that the contractor is meant to deliver. And I have a whole host of anecdotal evidence of, I don't know if mafia is the right word to use, but I think there are opportunists using what is well-intended legislation for their own ends. The instances abound. There's a hotel and mall worth 4.2 billion rand in KZN, Mshlanga. The interchange, a minibus full of people armed with AK-47s brandishing their firearms and bringing the process to a halt. Diepsloot on William Nicol, similar kind of stoppages. And Eastern Cape housing project. So these instances abound. It would be too simplistic to say it's mafia because it presupposes that it's some kind of organized crime. I think it's opportunism. And a lot of the companies, construction and consultants, have called for government intervention in terms of managing the criminality that may be driving this. Because I think there's the expectation is possibly well-founded by the local communities, but there are other elements who are using it for their own ends.
Who are hijacking, and I think that that's a common theme that has emerged so far. Let's throw it open to our emerging construction firm representative tonight, who's unfortunately on the phone, Tolo Nkosi, the CEO of Umso Construction. Tolo, what is your experience been on the ground? Have you been able to access as a subcontractor any of the SANRAL projects in your area?
Yeah, look, we operate nationally and we've been around for 22 years. So I'm not even sure if imaging is, the word imaging is still relevant in our case. But going back to the point, we have experienced reasonable contractors who look for opportunities, and where possible, we've engaged a majority of them meaningfully where they participate on contracts. I think firstly we need to dispel the myth that the 30% participation by local contractors is a new phenomenon. It's been around for a little while, except that it's been defined perhaps a little better than it was previously. Where in a case previously it would refer to local spend or local procurement, which would ordinarily include suppliers who supply services or materials to a project, while in this case it specifically specifies that a particular percentage goes to local contractors, and it's a sound mechanism to include local participation. Ismail hit the nail on its head when he says these are people looking for opportunities, and for 20 years, or at least more than 20 years, it hasn't happened. Maybe he says 20 years in the case of SANRAL, that's been around since 1998. SANRAL has done very well in building the infrastructure as we see it today. However, I think this is one area, if we're honest and genuine about evaluating our performance as an industry, stakeholders and the country, to say where have we not done so well. Where we have not done so well, and not only SANRAL, but a majority of large spent government entities or agencies have failed the transformation component of the achievement. Some of you would recall the likes of KUCHA in Port Elizabeth, the Development Corporation. This so-called 30% spend on local contractors, they started it more than 10, 15 years ago. And it worked excellently there. So once there's commitment to all stakeholders to have local communities participate, it eliminates any uncertainty that would eventually lead to what we've seen recently, the so-called construction mafia, so-called hijackers. But I think we should not miss the point, and we should not be quick to paint everyone with the same brush. The gentleman from Black Business Suppliers has said it. A majority of his clients are genuine SMMEs that only want a place in the market.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm hearing come through in crystal clarity. But we must go back to the fact that we're a constitutional democracy governed by the rule of law, and we cannot allow elements of criminality or opportunists to come and hijack what are legitimate complaints and concerns. To go back to what the preferential procurement regulations say, they say organs of state are required to identify tenders where it's feasible, in which the successful bidder must subcontract a minimum of 30% of the contract value, and that's for contracts above 30 million. So where it's feasible, obviously the law has to be written in such a way that it takes into account the practical challenges on the ground. That does, though, lend itself to confusion, and unfortunately, Gerald, and that seems to be a cause of a lot of the confusion on the ground.
Yeah, well, we can all agree that that's very much vague, to say the least, because how do you establish feasibility? Under in what context are we saying when it's feasible? What are the rules? What are you putting, as ground rules as far as the feasibility is concerned? I think clarification is necessary, and we mustn't only talk now because what is happening with people doing blockages is affecting the bottom line of businesses, and then start to pretend that there isn't a fundamental problem of exclusion. I think it's important for all the stakeholders to look ourselves in the mirror and ask tough questions, whether we've been doing enough. And probably Sandra can also tell us why they have not been spending on infrastructure for all these years. I mean, I think the industry seems to be lamenting that fact. But it's not clear why the expenditure in infrastructure development is not coming through as it's been happening in the past, which has led some construction firms closing down or downsizing their operations. All these things need to be talked and threshed out and be transparent, and all the stakeholders, SANRAL included, should come on board as far as that. I think when that PFMA clause that you've just read out now needs to be clarified a bit more, and we need to engage emerging contractors a bit more around it.
And Ismail, I don't know if you'd like to respond to the questions, particularly around the slowdown in expenditure from SANRAL's side and what's been behind that. And then we can also just talk about the role that you see SANRAL playing. I know your CEO, Skumbuzo Makazoma, when he appointed you, said one of your immediate priorities is going to be to ensure that SANRAL creates an enabling environment for small contractors, particularly black-owned contractors, to get access to opportunity through procurement. So exactly what are you doing in this space to fulfill that mandate?
Okay, so what we've done is that we've re-looked at all our tender documents, so all our procurement rules. We're adjusting those to include where we can using local contractors and black-owned contractors, so we're creating that environment. We've identified that they have a challenge when it comes to resources or access to resources. The biggest resource is funding. The next one is we will get the equipment that you need to build the road, and also then to get the materials that you need to build the road. The bigger contractors, because of their credit history and all of that, get better prices than the smaller guys. So we're doing an intervention at that level to be able to get it at equitable prices where the small guy can also get it and to be able to compete. The same with equipment. We on the 11th of July, we're going to sign an MOU with Bell Equipment South Africa. We'll make equipment available at good prices and better terms for the small contractors, something they didn't have in the past. We're engaging with CIFA, which is the financing arm of small business, to try and get funding, especially working capital and long-term capital for small businesses. We're also talking to the commercial banks, which we're engaging with. And then we'll start with the material suppliers. So we're doing all of that, and we're also going to do development programs, so training, where we will take a project of ours, get small contractors to build it. So we'll do some theoretical training, which lasts for up to about 6 months. We take them through 24 unit standards, and thereafter we will then put that training into practical, actual building of the road. So what they've learned theoretically, they apply on the site and then learn from there. So the plan is to take them at what CIDB level 1, and they exit the program at CIDB level 3.
It's a far more holistic approach to anything that's been done in the past. When you talk about some of the key challenges for smaller or emerging businesses, it is access to funding, it's access to markets and access to skills. So closing those particular loops. Is this the reason behind the slow pace of expenditure that...
No, the slow pace of expenditure is a number of reasons. One is...
E-tolls.
That is a real challenge we're facing. As you know, we've been downgraded by Moody's over the weekend. So that's because we're not getting sufficient funds coming in. We can't collect sufficiently from the e-toll. So that's a challenge on its own. That has led to about 3 to 4 billion rand worth of work we support out every year as capital projects has stopped. All we're concentrating on the toll side is servicing the roads and keeping them operational. So we're doing the day-to-day maintenance and we're paying the operators for the work that they do. So that's the one challenge. The second challenge is that the National Treasury has done a lot of small changes in the supply chain aspects, in the procurement aspects, over a short period of time. So over about 2 years, they came out with a number of rules. One of them is the standard for infrastructure procurement and delivery. It needs different kind of approach to things. So that has slowed us down. There's been some differences of opinion between us and National Treasury on how you interpret the PFA regulations that were published in April last year. But the one being that they look at it that the subcontractors with the 30% must be procured by the main contractor in his tender phase. And we're saying that's not practical. We want the main contractor to be appointed and then we identify the work together 30% or more. We believe that 30% is a minimum. They can do more in certain cases or certain categories of work, and others they'll do less. But we want them then to go out on tenders on a database that we would have developed with our consulting engineers at the during the design phase. So we now have a database that says these are the local guys, these are the guys who can do that. And then there may be certain guys that can do certain types of work, like concrete work, etc. And then we'll allow a tender process to run in the currency of that project. Then the main contractor takes the best tender and then that guy does the work.
And in that way, you have at least screened and vetted that potential supply base of smaller or emerging contractors that can actually fulfill that work.
Yes.
That sounds like quite a comprehensive response. Chris, what do you make of it?
Well, I think it's an excellent approach to move forward on the challenge, because ideally one has to be very mindful of the fact that the minute you go down the path of assigning a contractor to the main contractor, you then, as the client, assume the responsibility. So I can see the challenges that may arise in making sure then that you get the desired outcome for which you've established that program.
And as we know, legal liability is probably one of the most litigious sectors in the world, is construction. Gerald, as you sit there and listening to the response from Ismail on how SANRAL is approaching this, trying to look at it from the various different angles to say, well, we're not just going to go into this as we have in the past and tick a box. We want to try and be as comprehensive as possible. Does that satisfy you?
It's very laudable. I think it's recommendable. However, all these things sometimes become a problem when it comes to delivery and monitoring and evaluating. If SANRAL down handpicks emerging contractors and say, as a main contractor, use this guy and that guy, there might be an element of marginalization if you go down to a local level. Or feeling of exclusion. So I think we must think and talk about that a bit more. And it's liability issues come very strong as well. So at the end of the day, emerging contractors want real projects, and if we are able to demarcate even a portion of a project in a larger given project to say this we demarcate for emerging contractor. If it comes to maintenance of some of the roads, these are the things that emerging contractors can do right away. There's no need why we should appoint a big, large construction firm for that, who then subcontracts the work. I think those are the issues that we need to talk a bit more about.
The devil in the detail that needs to be thrashed out. Ismail, just one more thing that I didn't feel we touched on is the support you feel you're getting from government to ensure that we don't allow the criminal elements and the opportunists to derail the legitimate concerns of small businesses out there. Are you working with SAPS at the moment? Are you working with government to ensure that you stamp this out?
Yes, we've had a number of projects where we've had this, and the contractors have gone to court, got a urgent interdict, and then the police act on that, and they bring peace to the site. So we are getting the cooperation, but the issue is that we try first of all to try and negotiate with the guys, discuss with them, and reach a conclusion without having to go to court and things like that. So as far as possible, we're trying to do it peacefully. But the big issue is that for Sunrail, there's a major risk. If a contractor stands, we've got to pay for that. I mean, he's on the contract, his people are there, his resources are there, ready to work. And if he doesn't, it becomes what we call wasteful expenditure, because we're now paying the guy to do nothing. So that's why we're trying to say, let's resolve all these things up front. And these databases and things we're going to set up, we're going to do it in the design phase. So even before we went out to tender, the databases will be created for labor and for small contractors and suppliers. And then the main contractor knows now he's got these databases while he's tendering, and he can make decisions of what is available, what isn't available. So it's a difficult thing. It's going to take a lot of effort from our side to get it moving, but we need cooperation of all the sectors. From the main contractors, I know that in general, they buy into the idea.
That was Ismail Essa, Transformation Manager at Sunrail, who joined Chris Campbell, the CEO of Consulting Engineers South Africa, Tulo Nkosi on the line, the CEO of Umso Construction, and Geraldine Lorvu, Founder and Executive Director of Black Supplies. That's all for tonight, folks. Thanks for tuning in to Classic Business with me, Michael Avery. Don't go anywhere. Carolyn Stain with Classic Cocktail Hour. That's up next.